My guest today is Bonnie Casamassima. She is an interior designer and adjunct professor of interior design at SCAD, and she is the founder and CEO of Interweave People Place. They are an interior design firm founded just under 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, with a focus on environmental psychology and biophilia. So what does that mean? It means essentially spaces that are designed to enhance people's psychological and biological well-being. So Bonnie is essentially the guru of all things interior design and has educated me both on this podcast and outside this podcast on so many things that were intangible or somewhat esoteric to me in terms of design and space. I think this conversation is super useful for anybody who is impacted by the space around them, which is pretty much all of us. I thought it was a really cool episode to include on this show just because we talk a lot about design, creativity, art, but I wanted to kind of, I guess, complement all of those conversations by talking about how those things can, you know, tactically be a part of our lives and how we can interact with them. Kind of a staggering statistic, but we spend 90% of our life indoors as humans. I think it's like 87% is what Bonnie said, actually inside of buildings, you know, breathing recycled air under fluorescent or incandescent or whatever light bulbs. It's crazy to think about how much time we actually spend inside. And the space that we are surrounded by in all these spaces does have an impact on how we think, how we create, how we live. So this is a really important conversation, I think, and thank you, Bonnie, for coming onto the show and talking about Interweave and talking about your work and your career. Bonnie is a joy, really, an awesome person, and incredibly smart, just really, really talented and expert in this field. And I'm sure you're going to hear more from her. You're going to hear more from Interweave People Place. And yeah, I'm not going to get too much into it because, again, I'm a complete plebeian when it comes to my information awareness and knowledge on interior design. But Bonnie Casamassima, thank you. Great conversation. I'm sure you will enjoy it as well. And I will stop talking. And without further ado, here is today's episode with Bonnie Casamassima.
Any given moment, we know what the world is feeling.
Are you wearing pajama pants to school? Why, yes, I am.
I was, in a way, elevating him. I was celebrating him.
We wanted to build a beer pong table.
No, it's the Show ATL podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Show ATL podcast, the podcast where we find and highlight Atlanta creatives and creators. Today, we are sitting with Bonnie Casamassima, who is the founder, CEO, general, commander of Interweave People Place, or just Interweave for short, which is a psychology-focused, behavioral psychology-focused interior design firm. I probably completely butchered that, but Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be on here, and you covered it very well. Definitely.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. We got coffee a few weeks back. We're introduced by a mutual friend, Jimmy. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And I wasn't meeting you with the intention of having you come onto the show, but then after talking to you, I was like, what you are doing is such a good compliment to a lot of the concepts we talk about on this show, which is how do you create a psychology-driven space that is positive for people to interact in, right? I mean, how are you, we talk about artwork a lot on this show and space and visuals and multiple times has the concept of space and design come up. And so I was like, well, this is perfect because now we can talk about kind of the tactical side of what space actually means and how it can influence psychology.
Oh, absolutely. And thinking about that, we spend almost 90% of our lives inside buildings, be it our homes or offices or schools, it has a huge impact on how we feel, on our health, our well-being, the psychology of us. And it can be a really supportive vehicle for the tangible art that it's housing, or it could actually work to hinder it, right? So it all works as an ecosystem.
So I'd actually read that in just doing some background research on you, that 90% of our lives we spend indoors.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
depressing? Yeah.
I mean, kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it though.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that number, you're like, wow, that's high. That can't be right. But then, you know, I was, you know, thinking about that sitting inside of a coffee shop,
mm-hmm.
thinking like, well, that's not true. I left my house today. But then I was like, no, wait, I'm sitting inside right now.
Yep.
I walk to my car.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I live on the Beltline. At most, I'll walk like a mile
mm-hmm.
somewhere. And that's great. But that's like 10, 15 minutes outside
mm-hmm.
and then 2 hours inside.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So is that different between cultures? Do you know? Or is that just like a U.S. figure?
Oh, so definitely different between cultures and different between different lifestyles, right? So that number comes from the EPA. And it's that number does include car time. So when you're thinking about, you know, you're leaving your car, you're in your garage, you're leaving your house, you get to your car, you drive to your workplace, you park in a garage, you get in your workplace, right? It's about 90% of our lives are spent not physically outside. With that being said, the number is really around 87-ish% that we're spending in buildings. So if you think about it, it's 8 out of every 10 of our breaths is spent inside a building.
With recycled air conditioning.
It definitely is varies by culture. That number is for the U.S. And if you think about, some cultures are going to spend a little more time outside, and some a little bit less,
mm-hmm.
definitely. But regardless, it's it can be really overwhelming to think about it. But then for me, it's also, okay, what an incredible opportunity to say, okay, we're in these environments. How do we use them in such a way to really support the quality of life that we want to be living?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Get outside as much as you can, definitely. But when you are inside, how can we make that as supportive as possible?
So you describe yourself as an avid hugger, which you are, after our first coffee session, you mm-hmm. gave me a hug.
It's the Italian in me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's fair. Yeah. I'm Persian, so it's mm-hmm. like when the walls come down, it's full on love.
Oh, yeah.
But there's also like some walls initially that mm-hmm. you have to put up, you know, but... you also describe yourself as a nature lover.
Mm-hmm.
You're passionate about the way we build our environments, mm-hmm. right? But a nature lover who focuses on interior design. Do mm-hmm. you spend a lot of your time outside?
I do, as much as I can, right? A lot of my day is behind a computer or sitting in coffee shops or clients' offices or homes. And as much as I can, I try to get outside. So I love, in Atlanta, we have such an abundance of these pocket parks. So literally you could go right down the street and you're in the middle of the woods, it feels like it.
Yeah.
And so I like to hike and bike and camp, you know, those type of things. Kayak.
Yeah.
Love to be on the water, definitely.
Do you, where do you kayak? Just total tangent, because I'm trying to, I'm thinking if it's a worthwhile investment for me to get a kayak, because I love being on the river, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once you're in Atlanta, it's just the traffic is always going to be a hindrance with it. But you can go up north a little bit. The Chattahoochee is a great spot to just dip in for a little bit of the evening. Roswell Park, you've got where you can actually like go in at the same spot that you take out,
yes.
which is really helpful. And then obviously we're about an hour and a half south of Chattanooga, which has some really incredible whitewater kayaking there.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Sorry, that was totally random.
Oh, no, please. I love it. I don't do it as much as I would love to.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a new goal, is to get on the water more.
You're a business mm-hmm. owner now. And your time, I imagine, is your priorities are elsewhere at the moment. But
it's more specifically probably morning hikes or when I get out in nature a little bit more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find a lot of the design comes from your love of and interaction with the outdoors,
mm-hmm.
or is it something else? I mean, where do you find your inspiration, I guess, when you're thinking about a space and thinking about psychology of a space?
Yeah, it really always, being in nature is something that's very calming and restorative to me. So it puts me in a very creative mindset. But as far as the designs go, it's always driven by what are the goals of the people that I'm working with, right? And then the specific area of support that I work in is it's biophilic design. So we're basically looking at how do we feel in nature, in those natural environments, and what is that psychological reaction we're having when we're in nature. So we feel a lot calmer, a lot less stressed, a lot more energized and productive. And how do we pull those attributes into the designs of our spaces, of our homes, our offices, our schools? So it's a lot of inspiration does come from the natural environment, the specific research around that, and then pulling it into our homes or offices.
Mm-hmm. So biophilic design, biophilia, I imagine is the root word of that. What is,
it is.
What is the study of biophilia? What is that? I had never heard of that word until I started looking into what you do.
Exactly. And it's a newer term for a lot of people. Literal translation, it basically translates to the love of life.
Okay.
So bio, living, then philia, love. And it's looking at, the concept of we inherently are connected by, trying to think like, how do I articulate it, right? I said this a million times and now I, so biophilia does mean the love of life, and it's looking at our innate connection to all living things as living things. And, we inherently feel some pretty powerful benefits from that, because we are connected with that natural ecosystem, right? We are part of the food chain, all of it.
Right.
So it's looking at biophilia as really kind of that love of life. And then biophilic design is saying, okay, what is it about the research and the science around our impact with that and pulling it into our architecture or design?
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, I can't help but think, I mean, humans have been inside for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for thousands of years, we've had access to, you know, man-made indoor shelter, right? I mean, shelter is essentially one of our core needs.
Our core needs, yeah. When you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? It's at the bottom of it. So
yeah, I mean, so what I imagine that the biology of humans over time has been somewhat, you know, genetically modified by our dependence on space, in interior space and shelter, right? I mean, so how does that, we're no longer, you know, purely wild and free and natural as a species. We have become dependent on these structures and these spaces that we have built and we interact with. So, I mean, in your work, are you trying to get back to something natural in the way that like humans interact with space? Or is there even anything to go back to?
Oh, well, I think it's, when you think about how long we have been living and evolved, and regardless of what timeline we look at, right, proportionally we've spent significantly less time in the modern built environments that we know today, right? We've got air conditioning, four walls, you know, a roof, a lot of 90-degree angles, right? So I don't know if the goal necessarily is to go back, right? But it's saying, okay, we innately are connected to more natural environments because we historically have spent a lot more time proportionally in more natural environments, or even structures that were made of more natural materials, or they had more curvilinear forms, right? It's more about, okay, how are we understanding what that impact is from the natural environment on us, and how are we pulling those patterns into our modern day, right? Because air conditioning is really nice, right? My air conditioner at my house just went out.
Ooh, man, bad time of year for that.
It is July here in Atlanta. And it was such a reminder of how appreciative I should be with all these things. But all that to say, it's about saying, okay, what is it that's really powerful or supportive in our spaces now? And how are we using this connection and the psychology behind it to enhance that, to make it even further? So you're looking at things such as making sure your buildings are designed where you can get a lot of daylight into your space, so you're not in a windowless office all day, for example, or you're pulling in more natural textures such as wood grains. This is especially important today when we're looking at how much time we spend touching glass and screens. We're seeing in research that we are very hungry for that tactile experience, So the more you can get away from kind of sleeker surfaces, it's going to be more supportive for you. So it's more about pulling in elements and attributes of it. I mean, they're within the research, there are 87 attributes within the field, right? So we don't need to go off on a tangent with it. But and each different attribute is going to support different goals. So one's going to help enhance creativity, one's going to help reduce stress, right? And they're meant to be thought of as an ecosystem. So how are we not necessarily piecemealing,
right?
But making sure that the solution fits based on the person's needs. But it's looking in general those patterns and how we're pulling them in.
So a ton of questions. Mm-hmm. I'm going to table a couple of them until a little bit later in our conversation. But one that I feel compelled to ask right now is how much of that is adding to a space versus how much of that is inherent in the bones, for lack of a better term, of a space, right? I mean, when you're looking for, you know, let's say you're looking for a certain subset of the 87 attributes, let's say stress reduction. Is your work and is your intent to manipulate and add to a space until it fits the profile of your goal and what you're looking for? Or is it more so just inherent in the natural elements of the space, like the materials of the walls and the floor and the windows and things like that?
Mm-hmm. It could be both, right? So you can really benefit from this conversation if you already are in a space, and you can look at the things that are available to you there. So such, you know, paint colors, for example. So we're pulling in natural paint colors. We're pulling in wood top tables like the one we have here, right? And or you could even look at, if you're building a new building, you know, looking at the forms and the more I guess kind of structural elements within it. You know, how are we making sure that we're being really thoughtful about what we're working with, but knowing that we don't have to start from the ground up to implement this. It can be very easy to implement. I think that's really the nutshell, is we feel really awesome when we're in nature. We spend a lot of time indoors. It's what are those elements around nature that makes us feel awesome, and how do we pull those into our environments in a really human way? Mm. Like, this conversation can get really scientific very quickly.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. we could totally nerd out. I will nerd out on this all day. The nutshell is that we have direct biological and psychological benefits to us when we're in either built environments that integrate this research, or when we're in natural environments. So it's looking at where we are and understanding that as a starting point, and how can we enhance it? So if we're already living in an apartment or a house, like, what are the things that we can add to it, such as texture, such as making sure that daylight is there, making sure that the colors are there, making sure that the forms are there.
Right.
Or if we're starting from the ground up, right, it's looking at the design of the building to make sure that we're placing the spaces appropriately to align with our body's internal rhythms. So for example, maybe we're designing a house from scratch.
Okay.
There's an opportunity in the Western Hemisphere, right, where we are currently, to look at the placement of the rooms within that house to make sure that you're incorporating daylight throughout the natural patterns of your day. So, for example, where we are, the sun rises in the east. If we can put our bedrooms on the east side of that house, then we're able to rise with the sun, which then allows our bodies to go through the natural rhythm of being woken up with the sun.
Right.
And what that does is it supports our circadian rhythms. So there's this whole biological reaction. Basically, the second that sun hits our eyelids, it triggers a reaction in our pineal gland. And it says, okay, stop producing melatonin and start producing serotonin. I mean, that's very watered down what the process is.
But that is fascinating.
So what that allows us to do is wake up very naturally. It takes our bodies about an hour to wake up. And we're using the building and the orientation of it and the daylighting, which is also a powerful sustainability strategy, because you're using less overhead lighting or artificial lighting. You're using less energy. So it's such a win-win-win all around. And your body wakes up very restored versus jarred into that waking state. So that's, you're a lot less stressed.
I'm jarred awake every day of my life. even if it is just like a natural waking up. I feel like no matter what time I wake up, what I'm doing, if I'm getting up for like a 6 a.m. workout class, or if I'm sleeping in on a Saturday, I love my bed so much. Getting out of it sucks. It's always jarring. I'm like, no.
I'm not ready for this. No. Well, I mean, think about it when you, daylight savings, right? Yeah, like how long does it take for you to realize Okay, I'm back on that rhythm.
Right.
Right? It takes most people about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's because your body is basically jarred to shift a whole hour. And it takes about 2 weeks for your body to get back on those new rhythms. So
I think we should do away with it.
I agree.
We don't need it.
Let's get, I mean, they're the reason that we had it, we don't really need it as much anymore.
Right. I just don't see how it makes practical sense anymore.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, well, maybe you do. I don't know. Is there an argument to be made for daylight savings time?
I by no means am an expert in daylight savings times. But I know that for me personally, it definitely is disruptive to the flows and the patterns of my day-to-day. I get very sleepy, yeah. Very sleepy around it.
I have to start taking a different set of vitamins because I get very moody when it starts getting dark early.
Yeah.
And when I spend a lot of my working day indoors and it's dark when I wake up and it's dark when I leave to go home or whatever.
Oh yeah.
I get, you know, and if that's prolonged over multiple weeks and months, I get extremely moody, cranky, almost like into a depressed state.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to actually alter the course of my diet and my vitamins to make sure I'm accounting for that shift.
Absolutely.
And then it's the exact opposite. Like summertime, I am, you know, super cheerful. Well, I mean, relative, like on balance, I'm a lot more cheerful.
Yeah.
Because I'm spending a lot more time outside, sun, I'm getting more, you know, more heat, just more light coming into my spaces.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm super prone to, I don't know if everyone's this way, but I've always been very prone to shifts in my space.
Oh, absolutely. And I've heard that's a very common reaction, right? I mean, seasonal affective disorder, right? Mm-hmm. All these different things. And it has an impact on us, right? When we are out in the sun, we get vitamin D. So they're direct vitamins that we get from being in nature, in addition to the psychological and physiological reactions.
But, right.
What's really cool is that knowing that and being aware of it and adjusting your patterns accordingly. There are also some things you can think about. They actually have alarm clocks. So maybe you don't have the best case scenario where you can design in the Western Hemisphere that your bedrooms are on the east side to rise with the sun.
My bedroom is on the east side.
Yep.
But it's there's a massive magnolia tree outside, so I don't get any light really.
Yeah, you get a little bit. Do you ever open your blinds? That is a question.
They are cracked just enough so that when I'm lying in my bed, the light hits me, but like it doesn't illuminate the room so much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm rarely in my bedroom. I'm in my bedroom when I rise, when I dress, and when I sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that deliberately because, like, honestly, it's gotten to a point now where if I touch my bed, I'm asleep like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I don't do anything else in that room other than sleep and wake up and get dressed.
Yeah.
Right. So, but
that's such a best practice. That's awesome that you do that to hold that space. Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is not great because I like reading books as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll read one page of a book in bed and I'll be passed out.
Yeah. Then you wake up with a book on your face.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which has happened.
I saw it in a movie once. It's never happened to me.
Or it happens to me all the time.
I'm just kidding. you just need a little nook where you could read, just even out in the living room. Right.
I know.
That's your reading nook.
Yeah. I'm so bad at that. I'm so bad at doing that because my mind is, again, maybe it's how I've designed my space, but when I'm in the rest of my, I don't have a very big apartment. It's like 850 square feet.
It's a great space.
I love the space. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It means a lot coming from you, but I'm so restless that I can't like sit still and read out here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this is where like the work happens, you know, and then the bedroom is where the sleep happens.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't know where I read.
Where is that transition space?
I go like stand in the bathroom or something and like read a book for 2 hours.
Maybe out in the hallway.
Right.
Maybe
that's the other side. Yeah. Just go stand out in the middle of my hallway.
Put a little chair out
there. Total creep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. But anyway, it's why my, you know, friends and girlfriend get onto me for having 6 books piled up in my nightstand and taking like 6 months to finish each of them.
Oh yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
My Goodreads account is like, you know, it's updated 6 books at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Every 6 months, it's like 6 books done.
Yeah.
But anyway.
That's a backlog.
That's a personal tangent. So,
well, I think it's actually incredibly important to think about that is there's obviously the psychology of space and environments. And then there is the added like social structure or personal structure conditioning that you place personally onto that space, right? A bedroom for one person can be this refuge, and it's meant to only be a space that you sleep in, whereas maybe somebody has their office in their bedroom because it's the only area that they can do it, so it becomes a really stressful environment, right? So all of that is a part of that conversation that impacts how we feel in our environments. So ideally, if you can get that desk out of your bedroom, highly recommend it. And right. really hold that space. You're doing such a great job with like that is where you rest. And then other places are where you're active.
Yeah, I don't even take screens into that. I don't have mm-hmm. a TV in there.
That's awesome.
When I generally, whenever I go in there to go to sleep, I have already set my alarms on my phone and I just kind of put the phone away.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is like this respite for me. Like mm-hmm. It's awesome. But yeah. at the same time, it's, you know, if I like go lie down and take a nap, I'm asleep for like 8 hours. So
that's sleeping overnight. That's not a nap right. anymore. But in all seriousness, though, for those of you listening that aren't able to have that dedicated space for that respite, you can do things such as, you know, if you work on your computer in your room, make sure when you're going to bed that there's a drawer or something that gets tucked away in so it's mm-hmm. not always out. And ideally, try not to have, you know, TVs in there. It'll help your body to rest a lot more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I've like, again, random, I like talk about occasionally I'll have trouble sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And people will point back to like, well, didn't you have like, I don't know, like 4 meetings at coffee shops today and when you're drinking coffee all throughout the day mm-hmm. and then you're working on your laptop till midnight, yeah. you know, staring at a screen, oh, yeah. wired. I'm like, well, okay. Yeah.
So I could see maybe you have a point there. There might be something.
You might have a point, but there are rare exceptions to when I am fast asleep. And that typically does have to do with, well, coffee's a whole different story, but screens. I mean, mm-hmm. looking at a screen late at night for me, which is now just kind of a part of the routine, as I'm sure you have come to know as well, being mm-hmm. a business owner.
Oh, yeah.
It all kind of stops with you, and you don't really have the luxury of saying, well, I'm not going to address this issue right now,
mm-hmm.
because who will if you don't, yeah. right? So sometimes there are late nights where you're staring at a screen. You're mm-hmm. like, well, it's going to take me a little bit longer to go to bed. Mm-hmm. But
a lot of that has to do, and so definitely, you know, it's... It's basically the color spectrums of the lights that we're being exposed to past the time it's dark outside is really what starts to disrupt our sleep cycles. So when you think about things like alarm clocks that actually simulate a sunrise, so they have the same color spectrum of mm-hmm. a sunrise. If maybe you don't have your bedroom where it has daylight, there are workarounds that you can right. do with it. I know a lot of phones will have a setting where it actually changes the light spectrum of your phone at after the sun goes down, right? So it yeah. helps to not have such a jarring impact because it's hard. It's hard to disconnect as a business owner, as a non-business owner, all of it because it's such a connected world.
Right.
And then, so what are some tools that you can use to help to support that? Definitely.
Do you find when you just got back from a vacation
mm-hmm.
and I'm about to go on one. And do you find when you are in a place that is designed to help you kind of disconnect and shut mm-hmm. down, that it's a little, you know, there is an element of like despair to it, looking around and seeing everyone's still on their phones,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Like I feel like a lot of like the natural beauty in our world is not appreciated through our own eyes anymore, but through the filter of a phone screen, because we're always just trying to capture everything instead of actually living in everything.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like living in these fleeting moments of beauty,
mm-hmm.
but hey, at least I got it on my Instagram.
Yeah. Let me tag it real fast and let me just post it right now. Yeah.
Right.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. And I am a proponent of it too, right? It's they're addictive. They're designed mm-hmm. to be very addictive and they've done a successful job with it. And there's that instant gratification with it. So
right.
yeah, definitely. I think we're very frequently on our phones. I recently had the opportunity. I was in Spain in February mm-hmm. and I unfortunately had my phone stolen out of my pocket the second day I was there.
Oh,
and,
that sucks. I'm sorry.
You know, it was a little jarring at first because, right. you know, it's what I was using for my navigation. It was what I was using to communicate with people. And it ended up being one of the best things that could have happened to me on that trip. And I had my computer still, so I was able to check in and I was teaching online at the time. And, what it allowed me to do was to really be completely present when I was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't have that crutch to always look at my phone or try to take a million pictures. And, the pictures that rarely do you even look at afterward, right? You know, it's interesting.
If it's worth looking at for me, sorry to interrupt you, but I'll make a like physical printed photo book Yeah. Like there are some like trips I've taken where I'm like, oh, these are, it's funny because it's like, I have the pictures.
Yeah.
Right. And, but it's like, oh, I want to remember this trip.
Yeah.
So I'll print them, mm-hmm. which is like a little bit archaic, right?
Where it's it's so funny that you say that as on the beach trip that I went to, I've gone for the last 11 years with a group of really incredible women that we've gone every year.
Super cool.
It's so much fun. Such a reset. It's incredible. And one of the women got a Polaroid camera.
Oh, nice.
That she bought, and she got it delivered to the beach. And that was one of the best parts of capturing our experience, right? And all of us got to take one of them home. And we have hundreds of pictures on our phone from the week as well, which are just as exciting. But there was something about that tangible image that was there that captured it. So I completely agree. Yeah.
I love the resurfacing of the Polaroid mm-hmm. cameras into the market.
Oh, they're so hot right now.
Yeah,
man.
It's awesome. And those Instapix cameras my best friend just got married and they had a bunch mm-hmm. at their wedding.
Yeah.
And they were asking people to take their own photos mm-hmm. and there was a little guest book that they could put mm-hmm. all the photos in. And, you know, lo and behold, they have like many cartridges of film mm-hmm. left.
Oh,
and
man.
So every time we go over to their house, it's like this Polaroid party.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much more rewarding hold this memory, you know, as opposed to like, oh, let me scroll through the last 1,000 pictures mm-hmm. I took.
Yeah.
Right.
Isn't it so funny? I'm sure people like Kodak and Polaroid are like, really, guys?
Yeah. Like,
we're really happy that this is happening.
Washed up CEO somewhere on.
It's pretty
an island office severance package, like, damn.
Or hopefully, like, jumping up and down for joy, right? Like, it's incredible to have that. And I think that there's such a humanness to that physicality mm-hmm. of it that we've, that screens all don't always allow, right?
And it's very tactile.
It is. Yeah. And I think that's really part of why we're so hungry for that texture in our spaces, too, right? Is we want that socialization. We want that connection. We want to actually physically touch something.
Oh, totally.
And it all comes full circle. Yeah.
So let's get into that mm-hmm. in a second. But before we get too far down that road, sure. I kind of want to backtrack a little bit mm-hmm. and understand how you got to interweave mm-hmm. and where you're standing today with your own business. Kind of dialing it back to hearing a little bit about your background and your mm-hmm. story. So you have a BS in interior design mm-hmm. from the University of Tennessee, mm-hmm. right? And then you got your Master of Fine Arts mm-hmm. in interior design with a focus on spatial psychology?
It focused in environmental psychology biophilic design. The degree is in interior design, but my research and thesis was focused in environmental psychology and biophilic design.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was from SCAD. Mm-hmm. And now you're an adjunct professor mm-hmm. of interior design at SCAD. Mm-hmm. Super cool, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And you're about to launch an online course mm-hmm. as well, right?
Yep.
So we can get into that if you want. We don't have to get into it if there's like legal gray area.
No. It's really about how are we making the conversation of the science of our spaces really mm-hmm. human, and how do we make it accessible? And it can get very scientific, but how do we make it human?
Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm interested in, you know, if I have some time, I would love to take the course and understand. Mm-hmm. More about that. Is it designed for, again, a little bit of a tangent off topic, but is it designed for people who are trying to get into the industry, or is it designed more for just anyone who's interested in the subject?
Mm-hmm. The latter. Yeah. Okay. Designed for anybody that's interested in the subject, right? It's it can be very beneficial to people that maybe are interested in pursuing design as a focus. It by no means is a 4-year college degree. It's meant to introduce the conversation and walk away with easy to implement solutions.
Right? Okay.
To make, again, like no one, like a step one is know that there is a science behind this. Step two, how can we communicate in a really human language?
Mm.
And step three, how can you immediately integrate some of those maybe easier to use solutions for your own space?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll make sure to plug that before the end of this episode, so people know exactly when and where and how to access that.
That'd be great.
But tell me about how you got into this field mm-hmm. to begin with, right? You spent several years kind of honing and building your expertise in this field before you started Interweave.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, you were already pursuing the education of interior design. So mm-hmm. I guess, you know, before you even went to get your bachelor's, mm-hmm. where was the passion? Right. Where did you see yourself? And then over time, how did you kind of narrow that down to this environmental psychology and biophilia aspect.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a big question. That's fantastic. So I one of, where do I even start with that? I think the summary is that there is such a fire in my belly for knowing that this conversation exists and how can I share it with people that are interested in it. It started, there are a few moments that I can remember, these light bulb moments. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it's interesting to see things in hindsight and see how they all connect, right? Hindsight's always 20/20. When I was in college, I started out in psychology as well as sociology, right? So a major and minor. And there was still something that I just felt like there was something missing, right? And there was something that said, okay, apply to interior design. It was a program that you had to apply to. So I applied, I got in, and was really passionate about it, loved it, and found in a 16-week quarter, I was spending 15 of those weeks really designing the space, thinking about, okay, what did it feel like to be in this area versus that area versus this area? And in the last, 3 or 4 days, and I'm sorry for professors that might hear this, I would throw the presentation together, right? Be able to communicate it. But my head was so focused on, and my heart was so focused on, okay, how are people being impacted by this environment and the design, even if it's an academic project, right? Which is still very important. I never knew why, right? I just knew that that's how I was spending my time with it. And my senior year in college, I sit down, I'm researching for a hospital project that we're designing. And I remember looking at the clock. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'm sitting out in our library, Hodges Library, University of Tennessee. Go Vols. I know you're a UGA. That's all right. Yeah, we could still be friends. We could still be friends, but go Vols.
I host an art podcast. I'm clearly not that UGA football driven.
Same. I have not been. We could still be friends. Definitely. Friends with a lot of people. but all this to say, so I'm sitting there in our library on campus, and I find one article, and this is before the days of YouTube and Hulu and all of that, and I'm sitting 9 o'clock in the morning. I find an article that talks about how hospitals can be designed in such a way that helps to speed up the healing process of patients.
Okay. Right?
So I click on that article, which leads me to another article, which leads me to another article, and I start down this rabbit hole of just complete immersion, complete flow, and I'm reading information about the psychology of space and the environments of it and how we can design it in such a way that it helps people be less stressed and happier. And the next time I look up, it's almost 11 o'clock at night. Right? So literally 13 hours,
wow,
14 hours have passed, and I was just completely in my zone with it. And
you're
it was,
I might be into this.
I think I should probably pursue this a little bit more. Right. And, it was such such an immersive experience, and, did a little research, found out that, there was a reason why I was spending 15 weeks of my 16 week semester designing a space for how people could be supported. And, research graduate programs and said I really want to focus on this much more. And ended up going to get my master's with it. And there I am all moving around. Ended up going and getting my master's with it, and got to pursue it as a career after that as well.
So what did you, what did that initial application look like for you career-wise? Like what did you, you obviously had a passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
You put it to work, and spoiler alert, now you own your own business, right? Mm-hmm. So what was that journey like for you in your career that brought you to where we are now with Interweave?
Yeah, that journey, it was very organic, right? Because again, I didn't know that this field existed until senior year of undergrad. And it was in graduate school that I was exposed to the term biophilic design, and really incredible professors there that were able to talk about that field of research, and got to study under them. It's such an honor to get to work with the people that I got to work with, and continue to work with them. It's powerful. And it was really a series of these light bulb moments that went off. And it was a balance of being very focused and driven and passionate about it and being open to, okay, what is this next version or this next chapter? Looking back, you know, my thesis was very different than what I thought it was going to be starting out.
Okay.
Yeah. And
what was the thesis, if you don't mind me asking?
No, not at all. It really looked at workplace or offices, and there's a phenomenon around as people are having very different communication styles, and they are going in and I just like got out of breath. I got all excited about talking about this. Like, really, I haven't taken a breath in a minute. I'm gonna just pause. All right, here for a second. This is my geeking out right now.
That's good. The excitement is good.
Oh my gosh!
You can sense it too. Mm-hmm. Like when you're listening, yeah. I find that you can. It's a tangible thing. Excitement. It comes through the audio. So.
That's very kind.
I can feel it.
I'm feeling like a nerd right now.
No, but
like,
this is
because
great.
Nerds are awesome.
This is great. Our I think people who listen to this enjoy nerding out. Right?
Totally.
This is a sophisticated show.
Right? Yeah. Totally. So we got some really awesome, classy listeners here. So hello to you all.
Except for that one guy.
Yeah, he needs to get out of here. Just kidding. You can stay. It's very inclusive. So my thesis focused on how can we use the science of our environments to help reduce stress in our workplace, but more importantly, enhance effective communication, specifically around multiple generations. So as technology advances, as our world advances, as we become much more global, right, our communication styles are very different. And what that's doing is... if it's not done in an effective way, it's causing a lot of that tribal knowledge from our industries to be taken into retirement and not being able to pass that down. So
yes. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I've dealt with that so many times.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we're having to reinvent the wheel each time. And on the one hand, like that creativity that sparks is beneficial. And how can we look at the built environment, the research behind it to help to create stronger connections between us socially and create a stronger community and in turn create stronger transfer of knowledge and information and also reduce our stress, which by the way, increases our health and our happiness and reduces the cost of our healthcare plans and like all of it, right? As a company. So there's a lot of beneficial attributes on the human side, the social side, and you can start to link it to that return on investment for an organization too.
Mm-hmm. How did that change when you actually went into the field? I mean, that was your thesis, mm-hmm. right? So how did that evolve? I shouldn't say change. How did that evolve mm-hmm. when you went into the field? Did you find that it was incomplete, it was outright wrong, or it just wasn't the end of where your passions lied at the time, that there was so much more to explore?
Oh, absolutely. And it's this beautiful evolution. And I hope that if, you know, we have another conversation a year from now or 3 years from now, that there's this continual evolution with it even beyond this. And what was really powerful, so, you know, studying it, and I was able to start with an organization, Steelcase, where we worked in that exact conversation. So working with these large organizations to say, you have your business plans, you have your strategies, you've got an incredible support system with your employees and your organization, how do we maybe work together to say that your space, your environment, the physical areas around you mm-hmm. can be a tool in your toolbox to support those goals, to enhance that culture, to enhance that community, that connection, that productivity, you name it. So in that experience, it was such a powerful conversation to be able to work with these inspiring organizations and in a collaborative way. So no longer was I in this kind of internal research silo. I was able to really collaborate with such inspiring partners in that and get to, you know, have conversations with the C-suite level within organizations, the whole chain, right? And to understand what that diversity really could look like in certain areas. So pulling that experience and combining it with the academia, the research, and then pulling it into that business conversation was very influential for me. It's like, how do we start to make that connection cleaner. You know, it's considered a soft science, right? Like sociology, psychology.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's still a direct connection, and there are so many variables with people, right? If I come to work today and I had an argument with my partner, that's probably going to impact how happy I am, and the environment may or may not support that.
Unless you're a sociopath.
Yeah, you got those too, right? So there are so many variables when you're thinking about how the built environment can impact people. But we know without a doubt that it has a powerful impact on it. So how do we start to make those stronger connections that we can have a really strong impact on our business as well? If we have stronger, happier employees, how do we start to make that connection? So I was able to really start to bridge those two conversations with that experience.
And it is, I mean, it's such a valuable thing to be thinking about, just because, again, it is a soft science, mm-hmm. but it is important, and it has tangible effects mm-hmm. on how, I guess, we behave, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just how we interact, how we behave. I've worked in so many corporate offices. I was a consultant for many years, and, mm-hmm. you know, just as a result, I moved around through a lot of buildings in a lot of different parts of the world with different cultures and different styles and spaces and everything. And there were offices that I absolutely loved working in.
Mm-hmm.
They felt creative. They felt mm-hmm. productive.
Mm-hmm.
They felt, you know, nourishing, right, and life-giving. And there were offices that were stifling, dark, you know, they not like, you know, literally dark, but they put me in a dark place,
mm-hmm.
right? And they made everything I was doing feel like additional effort
mm-hmm.
just to interact and move within a certain space.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, I mean, people aren't thinking about this, right, when they go to work. They might feel it, but they're not thinking about it in the right way. They don't have the tools or the education or the experience or the knowledge to think about it in the right way, right? Mm-hmm. And even if they did, you know, there is a certain aspect of time and perspective and dedication to the craft that is needed to actually affect change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's you as the practitioner, that's where you come in, right? Where you're able to guide the transformation in a way that, you know, me, I've built my space without really knowing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I just know, like, I like this here. I like that there. I like how this couch feels. I like what this table looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But these are super, you know, layman's terms and you know, just very fluffy to me,
mm.
right? Mm. But there is an actual framework to go about this that you utilize and that, you know, interior designers generally utilize.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this is going to a question. I don't know how it kind of wound its way around, but people, and I'm not trying to make a broad assumption, but I imagine a lot of people look at the field of interior design and they just say, oh, they're just glorified decorators.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And not my words. Mm. Right. But they just pick out furniture and wall and paint mm-hmm. for the walls.
Mm-hmm.
How is that just a terrible misconception of the field?
Yeah. I think it's also like, it's not, we could definitely get offended by it and get, you know, frustrated, but just like, I don't know the ins and outs of what a specialized engineer does, or I don't know the ins and outs of what a specific doctor does, right? It's understanding that it's an opportunity to communicate and educate and expand that understanding with it. So within design, it's looking at, I mean, there is a very regimented education path for it if you want to be an education or you want to be a designer, a certified designer, right? And if you think about a hospital, for example,
mm-hmm.
what is in an interior design scope, if you think about the, you know, we've got the exterior of the building, we've got the columns in, nothing else is there, right? From that point until the point of actually like being in the building, the majority of that can fall within the interior designer's scope. So you're thinking about, you know, circulation patterns,
right,
wayfinding how you're getting through the space. You're thinking about adjacency of, you know, where the nurses' stations are to the patient rooms. You're thinking about, you know, access to patient rooms, to nature, daylight, etc. What are the materials? how are we specifying the materials where they have antibacterial components to it, right? So we're not enhancing the spread of germs,
right?
Like all of it, slip resistance, life safety, right? How are we getting people out of the building very safe? And doing that if there's a fire, right? There are certain distances, there's a substantial portion of codes that we have to make sure that we are always abiding by to make sure that we're supporting the health and well-being of everybody in those spaces.
Yeah.
Right. So all of that falls within the scope.
Right.
And that's an education opportunity, right? It doesn't mean that if you don't know that, that you're the worst person ever, right?
Right.
It's a conversation. And I think it's important to not, to really honor that, you know, we intuitively can feel what feels right for our spaces, even if we haven't gone to school for this. And, you know, you have your personality, you have your preferences, you have your style. And especially in the home setting, really, really honor that and own that. And definitely a designer can help with it, but you're not a savage, right? Like you have, you know, your own personal style, and really to celebrate that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one big thing. Cause I work with residential clients as well as, commercial clients. So
okay.
In homes as well as offices and schools and, on the research side as well as the design side.
Nice.
And what that, especially on the home side, is making sure that it's your space. It should be a reflection of who you are, and perhaps more importantly, be designed in such a way that supports the quality of life and the intention that you want to create with that life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that your house has to look like somebody else's house or a magazine, because you're not that person in the magazine.
Right.
You're equally a badass, right?
Right.
And you are awesome. And if you want to learn, I'll use an analogy. If you want to learn how to play guitar, right? Don't put that guitar in the corner.
Right.
In the closet, because your neighbor does that. Like, put it front and center and put it in a space that you can celebrate it and you see it. It'd encourage you to learn a new skill.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, well put. I was going to add something to that, but I feel like it would be a long-winded, unnecessary amount of words. So it had to do with the most recent issue of Architectural Digest that I got with Maria Sharapova on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, damn you, Maria. The
incredible
design is so
designer.
On point.
Oh, my gosh. Powerful designers, right?
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's so energizing about this industry is, oh, there's so many brilliant designers out there. And it can be, it tends to be a pretty collaborative conversation and supportive, especially in Atlanta. It's very, you know, everybody is friends with each other and supportive of each other, and everybody has their own approach and style. And more importantly, they're really listening to what their clients' goals are and needs are and making sure that the space is designed in such a way to support that.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, I love it.
Mm-hmm. I love it too. I wish I had more, I don't know. I wish I had more flexibility in my design aesthetic.
Mm.
You know, like I don't know. I wish I could tear all this down
mm-hmm.
and start over.
Yeah.
But I'm too like married to what it looks like now. I'm like,
yeah.
no, this is
where it is.
This is my space. It's mm-hmm. a little bit Fight Club-esque, right? Like when his apartment blows up and he mm-hmm. realizes he doesn't actually need any of the crap that he had built this perfect little world for himself and it all exploded.
Yep.
And I try not to put too much stock in my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But at the same time, it is like rewarding to walk into my home every day and know that I built this environment.
Absolutely.
You know?
There's something really primal about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
But I guess thinking about interior design in general, I think a lot of people think of it as a luxury good or luxury service.
Mm-hmm.
Is design a luxury good?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. It can be. I mean, it definitely can be. I think there's this perception that it can be. And one of the things that I'm incredibly passionate about is really helping to communicate that, yes, this can come with a really expensive price tag if you choose the items that fall within that, or you choose the land and the materials and all of it that fall within that. And you can also integrate these same supportive design solutions that support your psychological, your biological, you know, well-being, and do that without having to spend $1 million, right?
Yeah.
A can of paint is $30, yeah. right? And the power that it can have on us psychologically, the power to create inspiration and creativity. It's you can do that. You can spend $400 on a can of paint or $1,000 on a can of paint, right? But the biological reaction is
can you
is
actually
there.
Spend $1,000 on a can of paint?
Oh, I'm sure you can.
Yeah, well, yeah. Probably something yeah. out there. Yeah, some like natural indigo dyed something yeah. or another. Yeah,
it actually has gold fragments in it. Mm-hmm. It yeah. makes you a cup of espresso right. as well. So.
See, I'm okay with that. Make me espresso and yeah, and yeah
we, the best cup of coffee you've right. ever had. No, in all seriousness, though, I think there's, I'm actually part of an organization called Sustainable Design Collaborative Atlanta.
Right.
And we are all volunteer. And we're a group of architects, interior designers, engineers, construction managers, and just people that are really passionate about social justice around that. And
yeah.
our whole focus is we work with one nonprofit a year. And we actually go through and create an entire design vision for their organization, for their building, looking at sustainable strategies, mm-hmm. right? How are we being energy efficient? How are we making sure we're being efficient with our water and our natural resources? Because right. those are very precious and they're running out. as impactfully, how are we designing the space in such a way that it's supporting the organization, their goals, using environmental psychology
right.
with that, and it's doing it in a way that's a very cost-effective price point, right? And the organizations then take that package to funders to get the project funded and implemented, right?
Interesting. So
there's a really...
That's super cool.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's such a...
A needed service.
Such a needed service. And what's inspiring about this model is that it's such a repeatable model, right? We've got these diverse professionals in many areas in our world, and very repeatable, and there's definitely not a lack of need for it. So I would actually encourage the conversation to expand that it definitely can get expensive if that's the goal that you're going for and you're right. integrating these very sophisticated technologies. And it can be something that can be incredibly powerful that supports those who typically can benefit from it the most with a very low cost to it, right? Around social justice needs, right? So maybe right. our most recent project, we were working with a center for women and children that were going through homelessness.
Right?
Okay. And we looked at their existing building and said, okay, what are really efficient, low-cost strategies where we can take this existing space, use the power and the psychology of design to really support a reduction of stress, an increased sense of security, an increased sense of belongingness and right. connection
right.
through the design. So it's a conversation that could benefit everybody.
Mm. Is, I guess, in the simplest manner of asking this question, is building sustainably and still being, you know, still adhering to the nuances of design, right, when it comes to environmental psychology or biophilia, is it possible to do that sustainably? What are the challenges from preventing that happening at a mass scale? Like, why isn't everybody mm-hmm. who's in construction or in design having this very conversation?
Yeah.
What's holding us back in 2019 from everybody following these practices?
Yeah. And a lot of people are following it, which is nice to see. It's a growing conversation around that. I think there were so many well-intentioned individuals, right? We are constrained by incredibly rapid timelines of projects, incredibly high levels of expectations with the cost and how quickly we're building things and increasing demands, reducing, you know, scope, all of it. And I think an opportunity is really looking at how we're getting the right partners at the table very early in the conversation in a collaborative mindset. Right. And how are we, with Interweave and a lot of design organizations, it's, you know, how are we collaborating to make that pie bigger and, yeah. and more effective and streamlining the process in that collaboration instead of fighting over that same piece of pie. And we're starting to see a shift to that. As we start to get more specialized in these different areas, it's how are we getting, you know, the contractor, the designer, the engineer at the table before the design even begins
right.
to say, right. okay, what are some learnings? How can we put all of our heads together to say, okay, here's a draft of our design. What are some opportunities to make this more efficient? I think that's really where the opportunity is, that collaborative and integrative approach on the front end versus the historically siloed approach. We're starting to see a much bigger shift to the integrated approach. There's still opportunities everywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's really where we start to see the, we start to see a lot of the soft cost of a, your professional services. So set those fees, we start to see those, to be able to be streamlined, and we're able to identify more efficient building strategies on the front end.
Got it.
That help with the overall cost of the project. So I will also say that a more sustainable project does not mean it is more expensive. I think that's a big misconception, if it's designed in such a way, because a lot of these strategies are mutually beneficial. So if we're looking at the design of a space to support daylighting, right, or we're getting that daylight in, it's helping reduce our stress, we can also do it in such a way that we're less dependent on artificial lights. So it's saving our utility costs, our energy, right?
Is this scalable, though?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It's because it's a process, right? It's a process. As a general conversation, absolutely.
Yeah.
Being more collaborative, it's a new learning. It's a new approach for some, but it's definitely scalable.
So let's go into Interweave now.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start the company?
Yeah, I started about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And was really fortunate to have the professional experience, academic experience, and spent maybe about 2 years before that jump to say, I have such a fire in my heart about this conversation and have seen the direct impacts on people with the integration of, you know, the power of design and the power of a collaborative approach and an innovative approach. And sat down and I said, okay, where are the areas where I feel like I have elements that I can share in that collaborative approach? And on a personal side is, where do I feel like I am being energized the most in these past experiences? So instead of sitting down and saying, okay, what position title am I looking for? It's okay, what are the elements that I want to be doing in my day to day to be able to feed that nourishment?
So I guess, you know, I made a little bit of a right turn straight into Interweave, but I think we were covering a lot of concepts of design, sustainability, building upon kind of the journey of your education and career, and wanted to understand how Interweave is the culmination. Maybe not the culmination. Maybe it's still this evolving, growing thing. I'm sure it is. But how is it representative of who you are as a professional and a practitioner today? Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would add to that by saying, let's say I want to hire Interweave for a project. What type of client would I be, right?
Mm-hmm.
What would my needs be, and how could you help me?
Yeah, it's maybe in the, what is that movie, Office Space? So like, so what is it that you do here? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we can ask that in a different way, definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah. And again, this can get really scientific, and I can totally nerd out on it, right?
Whatever you're comfortable with.
No, but in a nutshell, it's saying that our environments have a direct impact on our biological, our psychological well-being, from the design of the building itself all the way to the materials that you're specifying in it, to the way that you're living in it day to day and maintaining it, right? There's a very powerful body of science and research that's growing that communicates how we can make sure that we're designing it in such a way to support you. And Interweave's passion is, how do we start to make those connections very human and accessible?
Okay.
So the tangibles is that we work with offices, homes, community spaces, right? And we work really in three big buckets. So we work on direct design support. So for your home, for example, we can come in and actually like design it from the ground up. We partner with contractors to actually do the installation.
Okay.
On larger projects, we can collaborate with other designers and other architects, where we're bringing that environmental psychology lens and expertise, as well as that biophilic design lens, as a collaborative partner. And on the design side, the second bucket is education. So we're doing a lot of conversations like this, a lot of, you know, speaking engagements, creating online courses to make it very accessible And then that third bucket is research collaboration. So we'll actually partner with design firms, for example, and help them to create a process and a protocol around conducting that third-party research to say, okay, what was the impact of this space versus that space? So we can continue to contribute to the growing body of research.
So I guess to, again, just for the sake of simplicity, right? Because there is so much we could talk about. But let's say I'm a, let's say I come to you as a client, let's just say residential client. What are, let's like go through a timeline maybe with like steps of like what can I expect in terms of working with a company like Interweave, working with yourself? Do you work with people who can, who know what they want? Let's say I don't know what I want. Right. Like what would an actual, I guess, project end to end look like? Right. What are we, what are the kind of things we're talking about? What are the steps to ensuring that, you know, I am, I guess my psychological, environmental psychology is like, tailored to me correctly. Right.
Absolutely. So the process, say you give me a call, right? Or you give Interweave a call. Step one is we have an initial conversation. There's a lot of listening in that initial conversation, a lot of questions. It's really that the seeking to understand. And that is not a, a process that is unique to Interweave, right? Many of the design and architecture industry, like that is the approach because you need to understand what your goals are as a client. From that conversation, we then take it and depending on, say you want to build a house from scratch, or you have a, an existing space that you want to say, okay, what are some things that I can do? Like, give me a roadmap. I want to do it myself, but give me a roadmap of what I should do and where. So we'll do the roadmap approach. So I come into your apartment, right? You say, hey, okay, these are the things that I want to experience. I want to be less stressed when I come home. I feel really frazzled. I am drawn to this type of environment, that type of environment. These are the ways that I want to live, right? I want to host dinner parties, or I want to learn to sew, or I want to have a space that my family can feel really supported in, right? And then from there, I take all that information, layer in environmental psychology, the research, and create a design draft. Then we come back, we review it together, we talk about the reasoning behind it, the strategies that are implemented with it. Revision happens, and then the final design happens from there. So if that's if we have an existing space. We can actually support in like overseeing the whole installation. Most of our approach is very rooted in there's so much good that is already existing in our environments. Right. And it's really looking at how can we minimize the need to buy anything new? And we're looking at how are we just reimagining what's already there and celebrating that in such a way. So honestly, a lot of our work is working with, some of our work is working with clients to really curate and minimize what is causing them stress and maximize what creates a state of appreciation and gratitude.
So in your experience, what is, what's like one example of a thing that people never think about, right? It's like so foreign to them that you implement something and they're like, oh wow, like this is an element of design or whatever, whatever it may be, whether it's a lighting thing or whether it's a fixture or a color or a texture or whatever. What, you know, what's a common thing where people are like, oh wow, this is completely new information to me. And thank you for bringing this into my life.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will respond with everybody is different, right? And so I'll give the example, you know, one of our support tools is we'll come in, we'll do an assessment, and then we'll create a report that has design recommendations. A lot of our clients are really excited about DIY, so doing it themselves. They just want a little bit of a guideline. So that is a really great support tool for that. And I think one of, I'll give an example of a previous client. She was really, really stressed and she didn't want to come home because it felt like there was just another list of all these to do. So she would literally sit in her car for 30 minutes to an hour because she just wasn't energized to come inside because she saw all the other things that she had to do and was overwhelmed by it. So how we work together is really prioritized. Okay, let's walk through your journey home. So from the car to your living room, what are the first three areas that you see when you come home? And let's start there. Let's prioritize, okay, that very first area that you see when you come in. do not make that where you put your pile of to-dos.
Right.
Right? And make that space really special. So make it be intentional. Like, don't pile your shoes. I wouldn't recommend piling your shoes there. Or definitely don't stack your mail there, because it's all the bills that you have to think about. Really make that first thing you see when you walk in to be very thoughtful. And ideally, you're putting maybe a few elements there that remind you of things that you're really appreciative of. So it starts to instantly trigger our brains into being in a state of gratitude and appreciation.
Yeah.
And we see a growing body of research that shows, you know, we're less stressed, we're calmer, we're in a higher state of wellness, right? Our alpha and gamma waves are engaged in our brain, et cetera, et cetera. So I think in a nutshell, a big opportunity that's has been powerful for a number of clients is really prioritizing what is that very first thing you see when you come home.
Right.
And making sure that it's an exciting element to you. If it is color that inspires you, like get a pint of paint, right? So maybe $10. Paint it a really vibrant blue or green, something that energizes you or calms you, if that's how you want to feel when you come home. Maybe you have a piece of pottery that your child made, right? And that's where you put your keys in that bowl. So you have this kind of ritual and this rhythm.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an award or a picture of a trip you recently took, right? There are elements there that remind you to be, that kind of trigger that state of appreciation versus like, holy shit, I've got so many other things I have to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If so, I guess from a DIY perspective, if you were to give one tip to someone who maybe they're like, I don't want to call any interior designers.
Yeah.
I'm not in a place where I need to do a whole overhaul or whatever. I just have never really thought about this way. I've never thought about my space and design as something that I have control over, or mm-hmm. that has control over me, I guess, is equally applicable. Where do you start? Where's like one thing that someone who's listening to this today mm-hmm. or this week could just go and make one simple change to their home that would, you know, make it more their own, make it more, you know, whatever they want to elicit from their space.
Yeah. I think Marie Kondo is incredible, right? And she's such a infectious personality. She coins it, if it doesn't spark joy, right? Try to find a new home for it. And
right.
I think another way to think about that is, if it doesn't make you say heck yes, then figure out a way that you can get that out of your life. And I guess the one thing you can think about, if there was a tap, and is know that how you feel intuitively, like there's a reason for that. And there's a whole thought process and a sequence that goes along with that. If you look at something and it makes you feel drained, or it makes you think of an unhappy memory, you know, we have to work through things, definitely. Like, we shouldn't be in denial. So if there was one tip to share, it would say, you know, make sure that first area that you see when you come in is filled with elements that are very intentional and that support the frame of mind that you want to be in. Mm-hmm. If you want to be calm, put things there that calm you, right? If you want to be energized or you want to be inspired, like, put a piece of art there that inspires you.
Mm.
Definitely.
What do you look for when you come home, that first space? What is home to you?
Home to me, man, that's such a great question. I love coming home because it feels like my house gives me a hug when I come home.
It's a really nice way of putting it.
Yeah. I play piano, and I'm relearning how to play piano. It is not like riding a bike.
No, it isn't. I used to play, and it's been a while.
Yeah. We had a piano growing up, and, you know, took lessons and didn't play for 20 years and found a piano recently. Found a piano recently and have just fallen in love with it. So the first thing that you see when you come home is the piano.
That's awesome.
And then on there I have a few pieces of art from some travels, as well as some pottery. I make pottery that I have on the wall. So it's just
cool.
Really beautiful reflection of it.
I love that. I think if you have, and I'm borrowing this phrase from Yukai Lin.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a wall, you need art.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Absolutely.
And that's what brings me peace. Mm-hmm. Is that I feel very warm and excited
mm-hmm.
by seeing my artwork and things on the wall because they all mean something to me, whether it's somebody had given them to me or I made it myself or I found it somewhere or it represents a person or a place or a memory. It's all, it's just deeply exhilarating when I see all of it together. So I imagine that it's a similar experience, I imagine, for you seeing these things that bring you so much joy as soon as you walk in. Mm.
Absolutely. And I think maybe the biggest piece of advice would say that really honor what you want in that space and not what you feel like you should put in that space.
Mm, that's really good. It's just a good way of living your life.
Yeah, in general, yeah. Right? Is, you know, don't take yourself so seriously. And if you want to put this crazy piece of tchotchke right when you first walk in and it represents something that makes you laugh every time you come home, like put that front and center, right? And celebrate that. Art is, I think that, I hope that goes without saying, is be really creative with that, you know, and be bold with that and don't feel like your style needs to be like everybody else's because you're a unique individual and let that be celebrated.
Yeah. There's so much more to talk about. Mm-hmm. I feel like I could have so many different trains of conversation with you about space and design and psychology. And
I do want to share one story about the kind of the personal journey of now I'm able to connect the dots in hindsight and realizing that, you know, this shift around education and then working in the industry and now starting Interweave, it's been in reflection, something that I felt intuitively my whole life. And I didn't realize it until like, having the time of reflection before I started Interweave. And I remember a time when I was maybe about six or 7 years old. And I'm one of five kids. I'm next to youngest. So okay. I have a big Italian family. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I always shared a room. And we had one closet, little closet. You know, it wasn't a walk-in closet. And I remember one day taking all of her items out of the closet. And I would like to think that I neatly folded her clothes and set them on the bed, but I'm sure I just chucked it all behind me to get it out of the closet. And I took the closet that we shared and I made it my own reading nook. And I set a little lamp in there and I closed the door. And it was, I mean, it was maybe 2 feet deep by four feet deep, right? Really small space. And if I'm remembering correctly, my mom was really awesome and she let me have that space for a few hours, which is glorious, right? And then I had to, you know, convert it back and my sister ended up getting a little more space than I did in that exchange.
Yeah, fair.
But looking back at it, I realized that I was really craving a space of my own, right? And I was realizing in hindsight that I can be extroverted by nature, and I get a lot of my recharge by being quiet and kind of having my own space. And I was intuitively creating that space for myself to support that, not knowing what it was called, not knowing that there was environmental psychology, but I intuitively knew that this is what I was yearning for. And that definitely, as I'm looking back, it's like, that makes so much sense, right? It wasn't just that I was stealing my sister's closet, which is kind of a punk move, you know?
Kind of has to do that at some point, in some
exactly.
form or another.
Yeah. I think typically you could find me in the trees. I was climbing trees all the time, and you would be up there to find my own space. But I guess maybe it was raining that day. But now looking back, I realized like there was a need that I didn't have at the time where I needed that recharge and that introvert in me needed that recharge. And it's incredible to say, okay, now we can put a name to it and to be able to work with clients and support that we need an ecosystem of support tools with it. You know, you need spaces to recharge, you need spaces to be collaborative, you need spaces to be on your own. And all of that is beautiful. And to honor that. So I think going back to kind of close it out, that even if you're not a designer, right, you intuitively feel what you need that supports you. And to listen to that and honor that and know that it doesn't have to look a certain way for it to reflect who you are. And if you want a space that's a little closet that you've converted into your reading nook, then do it.
Yeah.
If you can. And try to maybe fold your sister's clothes instead of just throwing them on the ground behind you.
Or your spouse.
Or your partner, whoever, right? Absolutely. But really going back and honoring that your interior environment should be a reflection of who you are and to celebrate that from the design of the space to where you live, to the art that you're putting on the walls, to really celebrate that.
Yeah, I love that. And mm-hmm. and it's become so much more a part of my life, and I appreciate it so much more mm-hmm. when I go into a space that isn't my own mm-hmm. and I can see thought behind design. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me happy to see intentional design. And
oh yeah.
So thank you for adding a little bit more of that into our world.
Absolutely.
And educating people like me on why it's important and how mm-hmm. we can be better stewards of our spaces, right? Because we spend so much time in them.
Definitely. There's a heart behind it and a science behind it. Yeah. And it's how are we finding that balance and unifying both of them to create a space that supports you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so thank you first of all, just educating me mm-hmm. and bringing this into my life, which it's just been super cool knowing you for the past few weeks.
Likewise.
And hopefully into the future. Mm-hmm. But speaking of the future, mm-hmm. what's next for you and Interweave? I mean, you're a young company, mm-hmm. year and a half. What's coming down the pipeline for you in terms of evolution and growth and change and opportunities?
Yeah. Really, the next wave is working with those online courses that we're creating to make this conversation very human and tangible, with specific examples of a little bit of the research, right, to give that root and that context, and really focus on, okay, actionable. How are you implementing this? If maybe you're not yet ready to engage a full designer, or you're not yet ready to go and spend 8 years of your life studying this, right? That is the next wave. Another layer of the next wave is building that collaboration and partnership with existing design firms and architecture firms and existing clients to partner and bring the conversation of environmental psychology and biophilic design as an area of expertise to that existing infrastructure. And then the final one, I think we talked about this a little bit, is really starting to collaborate with more community-driven organizations to say, okay, you've got a mission, you've got a vision. How can Interweave come in and support that conversation around how the design can help to really foster that feeling that you want to create
right.
in your environment to support that and nice. Do it in a very human way. Right. Yeah. I think that's synthesis of all of this is there is a lot of science and there's research behind this. And that is what drives us as Interweave as an organization. And we're making it very heart centered and very human in the approach.
Well, mm-hmm. but thank you again. Mm-hmm. And I wish you nothing but success.
Thank you.
And nothing but growth mm-hmm. and, you know, moments of triumph as well as moments of, you know, learning through trial by fire mm-hmm. and growing and no growth comes without growing pains. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that they are as smooth as they can be.
Thank you. Yeah. And what's powerful with this, and thank you, is the collaborative approach that we've set up. And we have so many wonderful partners with us. So it's a growth and an opportunity, and we're not alone when those bumps happen.
Well, you are a very enthusiastic and your spirit is infectious.
Oh, thank you.
As a person. I think that I knowing your work and your mission and knowing you, I there's no way I couldn't support you. And I imagine anyone who meets you and works with you would feel the same way. So I'm sure you're gonna do just fine.
Thank you. And
here's to continuing to add design and beauty into the world.
Thank you. And likewise, what you're doing with this conversation and the podcast and being able to spread the language around how art can come in so many different forms and have such an impact on people's lives. It's an honor to get to work with you and know you. So thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. This is fun for me. Mm-hmm. I do this just because people are awesome and it's an excuse to make a new friend and to learn a little bit more about the really cool people that are honestly just Atlanta is such a wonderful city.
Isn't it so cool, man?
it really is. And I've been around a few places and I've talked to a lot of people and this is really a special place. Mm-hmm. I'm not just saying that cause like, this is my home, mm-hmm. but like, it really is a special place. There are people here making a difference.
And
I mean, that's the only reason I'm doing this is because I love talking to the people who are making a difference, mm-hmm. like yourself. But
thank you.
Where can people find the online teachings? Mm-hmm. Where can they connect with Interweave or with you? You know, tell us about where you are online, social media, the classes,
definitely.
Et cetera.
Yeah. So we are on interweavepeopleplace.com is our website. From there, we have links to our social media pages on Instagram as well as Facebook. So Instagram and Facebook, it's interweave_peopleplace. So please follow us and reach out. We also have an opportunity to sign up for our newsletter where we send it out about once a month. We are never going to bombard you with information, but what it's filled with is really easy to implement tips and tricks around the conversation of the science of interior design. So how you can use it in your day-to-day life.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And then the classes will be available when and where?
Yep. So they'll be available on our website. We're actually launching the pilot now.
Nice.
For our first one, which is focused on really creating a vibrant and healthy home. So we're going to be focused on residential for that one. And the next one is going to be focused more on the biophilic design, which is going to be scalable in the sense of you can use it in a home or your office or community space. It's more about the background of it and more specifically how you can implement it into your spaces. So that's going to be coming out in August.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I look forward to that, and I will I'll put a link to your site and everything in the show notes.
Perfect.
Here, so people can find you.
Yeah, and getting signed up for our newsletter is going to be a way that you can stay up to date on when all those courses are going to be available, and they will be fully available on our website eventually.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, follow the show notes for that. But Bonnie, thank you so much. Bonnie Casamassima. I knew I was going to mess it up at some point. Damn it.
Funny story
on that. I went the entire episode. Yeah,
I know. That's all right. No worries. It happens all the time. I played softball in high school or junior high and, t-ball up to junior high. And everybody had these really nice names that fit on the back of their jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
Mine actually had to go from arm to arm to fit it. So it's Casamassima, but Bonnie works just fine. There's no spelling exam at the end of this.
Fair. Good. Because I would have failed. And it's funny because my last name is Benamory.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty long.
Yeah.
All kinds of weird letters in there. And here I am butchering your last name, so I'm sorry.
Thank you for the apology. No apology needed. Bonnie works just fine, and I completely understand.
Well, yeah. Bonnie, thank you so much for coming on to the show. I am so excited to see where Interweave goes and how it grows. And just excited to know you, so thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Show ATL Podcast, the podcast where we seek to find and highlight Atlanta creatives and creators and tell the stories of the people and organizations making amazing things in our city. I am your host, Parsa Benamory. Our show today was produced by Mr. Coleman Erkins with help from myself and Corrigan Nolan. Our music is produced by Relax with Alex. Want to thank all of the guests who come onto this program and tell their amazing stories with us and share with us, as well as to our wonderful listeners who continue to support us week in and week out. If you love this episode, if you love this show as a whole, if you like Show ATL and consider it something that you listen to frequently, please consider giving us a 5-star rating or a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever else you use to listen to your podcasts. Please consider supporting us if you care to. Again, we're a small team working to put together this show for you every week. And we have a Patreon page, www.patreon.com/showATL. You can give a one-time donation or a recurring donation. All funds will be used to make this show better and better and better for you. So we would greatly appreciate that. Thank you again for listening. Thank you again for supporting us. Thank you again for being a part of the conversation that we continue to have day in and day out to make our city a better place, a more creative place. We will catch you next time. Thank you. Goodbye.